And we are back. It is 7 minutes after 3 o'clock at WSMI. It's my pleasure to have one of my favorite guests that we've done. Well, I don't know how many times Roger's graced the airwaves at WSMI. My show, I think this is at least the second or third. But today we wanted to welcome in Roger Cradaville from Mount Olive, who I've said many times probably knows more local history than anybody that I've ever talked to. Now, I know he'll say there may be other people who know more, but not that I've met, so I'm glad to have him along. Thanks for coming in, Roger.
I appreciate the comments. Thank you.
I've been telling people that the things I wanted to talk about today, obviously we want to talk about the 3M League, that incredible semi-pro league of baseball players. I guess we could call them semi-pro, or we could just call it a town league, but gosh darn it, it was something that lasted for so long and started so long ago. What exactly was the 3M League?
Well, every town, big and little, had baseball players. They always did. It was the one sport that many of the immigrants who came over from the old country learned and found out about. You know, as one guy once said, baseball's an easy sport to remember. All you got to be able to do is hit the ball, you know, catch the ball, and throw the ball.
And you
think about that, they're probably right. But there was, every town had kids that played. Today, and I'm not going to talk about this much because everybody knows it, that you can't find kids on the sandlots during the summer. And that's because, to some degree, we have over-organized the sports. You know, you don't need a shirt, you don't need all the equipment. If you look at these kids on the way to a game today, I mean, they got the most up-to-date equipment. You think major leaguers, and I worked the Cardinals for 22 years, so I've seen a lot of professional players and the equipment that they get. But the kids are well-equipped, including my own grandchildren. And, you know, I had a son and a daughter both played, and we were able to get them the best equipment. But going back to the 3M League, these towns wanted entertainment. And I wrote a story a few years ago about a pay-per-play. I don't know if you remember that or not, about players that used to be paid to come to a town to pitch or to hit or to catch or whatever it may be. But when the 3M League was started, it was probably after the Depression years, but probably closer to World War II. And with guys that were available, and it really got into its own height when probably in the late 40s. And there were two people that were really instrumental in the old 3M League. And one of them was Pop Dedeker, who owned Dedeker's clothing store in Staunton. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really was the machine that made the thing move. And then he had his old sidekick from Livingston, Andy Simani. Now, he had a son later who was quite an outstanding athlete as a pitcher, and I remember him very well. But those two guys pushed the 3M League. And towns like White City that had 300 people had great teams. I played from 52 to 1970-some, over 20 years. And I started when I was 14. That wasn't unusual. I remember the story how I first started. And I played college ball and worked for the Cardinals and all these highlights of my life. But the greatest thrill that I can remember was when I was 14 years old and I went into a block tavern in White City. It actually had a hall, so I wasn't in the tavern, but I was in the hall because it was either a wedding or a dance. And keep in mind, these small towns, everybody went to these things. I mean,
sure.
There was a wedding, everybody went. There was a funeral, everybody went.
Everybody went.
I mean, there were no invitations. You just went today. And Nick Vukovic was the manager of White City, and he called me over and said, "Hey, Rod, how you doing?" I said, "Nick, how are you doing? One of my heroes growing up." And he said, "Would you like to play for White City?" And remember, I'd been the bat boy since I was probably 10. 3 or 4 years, I'd been the bat boy. I was so excited and so thrilled that when I went home, I couldn't sleep that night. That's how much of a highlight. Now, keep in mind, high school excitement and skills and college and all the other stuff that I've done, this is the one thing that I remember the most about, because it was a big deal for kids to play, and everybody did play. So who was this 3M League? Well, it was organized by those two men I mentioned, And it includes towns some of you never heard of, right? I remember Piron, Millersburg. I told John while ago off the air about Three Maples, which was like a, I don't even know if it was a town, but it was over there by Brighton someplace, and they had a ball diamond and we played there. I can remember going to Prairie Town and New Douglas. I remember Prairie Town because the cows were grazing on the field. And when the game was ready to start, they had to chase the cows off and take them back into their pens. And, of course, you had to watch where you stepped after that game. And I remember Carpenter, a little town there. You know, when you could pass Hamel on the way to Bethalto, you see a little town right by the railroad tracks.
Quercus Grove Road, probably. was it.
Just every town had a team. Mount Olive had a team. White City had a team. Sawyerville had a team. But now, Gillespie, Staunton, I mean, you name them. Litchfield had for years was in Hillsboro. And many of these people were either on the way up to be pro players, not all of them, but some of them, or on the way down. Because you knew when you were playing somebody. I can remember playing Alhambra. And they had a guy that was their pitcher for the day. I had not seen him all year. And he had Memphis Chicks on his uniform. I knew exactly where he had just come from.
Right.
He had just been released by the Memphis Chicks. And the Alhambra fans, you know, or team and manager, got him to pitch. Some of them were pretty well-known people. You know, I mean, look at the guys that you know from Hillsboro, for instance.
Mentioned Ralph and Norman Osborne.
Oh, yeah. These people there, as well as people from all over, who had opportunities to play ball. And I remember playing for playing against Carpenter, which became Bethalto years later, where a professional basketball player from Edwardsville played baseball for them. And he was an outstanding player. So the best of athletes played. And these games were tremendous, you know. I just wrote a story on John Sarek a couple weeks ago, who just died. They called him Shine, and he umpired. You name a town, he umpired there. So he had to be careful and hire him because, you know, you were going to go to another town. He was there. It's like years ago in football, you know, and you could get Shorty Griffin from Livingston, the same referees, referee football games at almost every town. I can name you those guys.
Yeah.
And so they were honest people, so they'd hire them in all the towns, so you didn't argue about it. But in baseball, you'd see the same people, too. But the team had a championship that was in. In 1953, we won it. Our pitcher was 40-something years old, that pitch, because we had an outstanding pitcher named Ted Thompson, who was pitching for us. They called him Carmy. And he had played softball during the weekend and broken his hand or something. And so we had to bring one of the guys out of retirement, Al Bertie Brobig, who threw what's called a finger-and-a-half curve. He used to throw a curveball that was a finger and a half, and it would break like that, and we won the game against a team that had beaten us earlier in the year.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, I mean, those kind of stories are very prevalent. And you name me a town, and I can name you 10 stars that were from that town, from way back. I mean, another one I forgot, Williamson. Williamson had a team, Schramm City. But Schramm City wasn't in the 3M League. They were in a different group there. But I remember playing Schramm City. And you think, Schramm City, could you get nine guys or any of these towns, you know, to play that? It might be tough.
No. Yeah.
But those days, you never had any problem.
No problem at all. That's amazing. Did Palmyra have a team?
No. Palmyra Northwestern didn't have a team in the 3M League. We never went that direct. Carlinville, for a while, had a team, and I can remember some of their players. I remember where they played at. And then, of course, keep in mind, after I retired from 3M ball, Atwater and, you know, some of those towns around Standard City, they had outstanding 3M team. And many of those guys who had formerly played for Carlinville or, you know, some of those towns. And that's another thing, too. Keep in mind, a lot of these, as I mentioned with this Alhambra, they had imports, people who came in from other towns.
Oh, sure.
I mean, White City, we had the nucleus, mostly White City guys, but John Sarek played for years. He lived in Sawyerville or Bunnell, and he played there. And Ernie Marmino from Bethalto, and I can name you a bunch of those that have come from those areas And they always love playing for White City for a couple of reasons. One reason is that's a good team, so you were going to play with good players.
Yeah.
Secondly, after the game, there was always a case of beer underneath the tree there where you sat, drank beer, and told stories about the game.
Absolutely.
And all these games, by the way, were so competitive that people in those towns bet on them. White City had guys, I could name you those people, Charlie Wimbley and Bo Johnson and Louis Mitchell. And those guys, they would bet $5-$10 on White City beating whomever. And you better play well.
Yeah.
We had a guy one time, real quickly, we had a guy one time played left field for him. We brought him out of St. Louis. And he was a football coach, believe it or not, but a good baseball player, too. And he played left field, which is in front of the tavern where the fans sit. And he couldn't take it because he missed the ball. And the fans were on him. I mean, he was going to challenge him to a fight. And I'm saying, hey, you don't want to do that here. First of all, you see those guys there, that one guy there? He got out of prison about 20 years ago. He was stealing tires during the 20s, and he spent it. And this guy was in reforms. I mean, not all of them, but I mean, some of them had their own characters, you know.
Right.
And they were betting on these games. And so I said, you can take it seriously by playing seriously. But I know one thing. I played outfield. There's no way a ball was going to get by me. I'd have to chase it in front of them. And they had short memories, believe me, about anything you did good.
Roger Cradaville, our guest, as always, full of stories. And thank you for coming today. We'll have more from Roger in just a couple of minutes. Back here with Roger Cradaville. I just had a text from one of our listeners, and there's a lot of them listening, been waiting for this today. Did Raymond or Harville have a team, or did you know of any players from that area?
In years later, they did, but not in the year that I played. Raymond, because they always had outside, but they were always great baseball players that came out. Now,
yeah.
Paul Hubbard, I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he lives in that area somewhere. Good friends of Larry Ackburn, former principal of Hillsborough High School and Hard Keep 'em Out. Those are hunting buddies and, you know, drinking buddies and all the other things that go together with buddies. But Paul always talks about playing 3M ball. And now, keep in mind, Route 48, Raymond, Palmer, Harville, Morrisonville, right down the line, they always had great baseball. Harville has a great history with the Unser family and all the Unsers.
Oh, sure.
Philadelphia Philly organization.
Right, right.
Where it started there. Of course, Ray Schalk, apparently, even though I'm sure he's quite credited to Litchfield, he was born there.
Born in Harville, yeah.
And Colson and Nokomis and those towns there, they always had great baseball. And they had baseball paid for play. I think I talked to you about this once before, maybe Terry, I'm not sure. But those farmers out there loved their baseball. And farmers were always big in baseball. There were a lot of farmers that could hit their physical careers that they have. You know, they could hit the ball a mile.
Sure.
And they used to, well, my dad was hired. He jumped the train in White City and take it all the way to Palmer and get out there. And they'd pay him $15 for a win and $10 for a loss. Then he'd jump back on the train, go all the way back to Mount Olive. Walk back to White City.
It's amazing for anybody young to hear about taking a trade from White City to Palmer.
Yeah, jump the box. Well, the coal mine was working, so you could take a train right to, you know, pick it up right there by Mount Olive, even just take it over there. And then there was always one coming back. There was many 40, 50 trains a year a day went through there.
Okay, not a passenger train. He just hopped a freight. That's okay. Yeah, a coal car.
For your life, you know. But him and then once in a while, my dad would take his catcher with him because they say we need a catcher, too. So he'd bring Mike Zippy, who owns Zippy's Tavern in White City. He'd bring him, and he'd get 10 and 5. He'd get 10 for a win, 5 for a loss. And one quick story on that. One time the farmers decided that the owners of the team decided they were going to raise the price from a quarter to 20 cents. Excuse me, to 30 cents. For admission to the ball games, and they quit coming.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had to take the price and take it down back down to a quarter.
My God.
Get them to come. You think of that, a nickel today. You know, you lose one and don't worry about it. But
That's incredible.
Good stories, yeah.
When you were playing, and we're talking about, you say, 1952 or so when you started.
Yeah, in the 50s.
Up into the 70s. It was just such a different time. I mean, we barely had, you know, regular television shows to watch. We were still listening to the radio a lot for programming and things like that. There certainly was no technology like we have today. I would have to imagine that these games were anticipated by people. I mean, this was like the minstrel show coming to town almost, or the vaudeville. You know, it's game time. Let's go. Pack a lunch.
Ed Becker, who was the owner of the Becker Funeral Home, my mom told me that his grandfather, old Ed Becker, way back in 30s, 40s, if he had a funeral, he would take a special trip out to White City to put his dollar or whatever it is in the dick of the pass the cigar box around,
mm-hmm.
and then come back. That's how much he felt the strength of this. I can remember Judge Koval from Staunton being a big supporter of White City Baseball, and he would give us $10. And we thought that was a huge amount of money. And what did we need the money for? Well, you had to buy balls and bats, but you had to pay the umpires, too.
Yeah, and you had to get that case of beer
game. Well, the case of beer usually was provided by the tavern, the
first one,
with the idea that would be a motivating factor to have two or three more.
That's right.
Yeah, and they did.
That's right.
The strategy worked.
That's right. That's just absolutely amazing. We talked about the 3M League. Now, you mentioned teams that weren't in the 3M League but also had town teams where they played a lot. You mentioned the Route 48 corridor. You talk about Nokomis and Colton and that area there. And, of course, then you had that local 3I League. You know, the 3I League was a minor league, but at the same time there were like Shelbyville and some of those teams were in a – wasn't it called the 3I League?
Yeah. Fitzpatrick Stadium in Springfield had a team there, and Decatur had one, Decatur Commodores. They still have a team called the Commodores, but it's not professional. It's an offshoot. And, in fact, I think either one of the DeBrinos, either Don or his brother Bob, played for Decatur. I know one of them played for Clinton, Iowa, which was a 3I team. And the Springfield, of course, where Robin Roberts Park is at now, they had a team. But that was Class D. You know, remember today they have basically two or three divisions. You have the rookie league, but they got A ball, double A ball, triple A ball, and then the major league. Well, those days they had A ball, B ball, C ball, D ball. You know, so if you were playing D ball, I mean, you were really at the end of the line. You could sign, I think at that time in the 50s, if you got over $4,000 or $5,000 as a bonus, you went directly to the majors. I think Schofield did that. Dick, the father, the grandfather now, went that way. Went to the Pittsburgh Pirates because of the bonus he got. But that's why they would keep your bonus underneath $5,000. I know I was fortunate when I was a junior in college to be offered $4,000 to play with the Pittsburgh Pirates, and my coach talked me out of it, and I'm sure glad, because the chance of making the majors is pretty rough. And
You didn't have that many teams.
That's 16 true, too. Teams. Yeah. Plus, my career in teaching and coaching, and I mean, it led me to many different places. And so I was better off by not making that decision. But the 4,000 really rang a bell with me. But college, it was so hard for me to get to college, you know, with my dad being a coal miner, that I wasn't about to take a chance of losing that.
No, I can understand.
So I stuck with it. And it worked out well for me.
We're going to come back and talk a little bit about that career at EIU. We're going to talk about a couple of other things. And one of the things I want to talk about also in next segment, I'll let you think about this, is what you think about Major League Baseball's plan to shrink the minor league system as much as they're talking about. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I know you've got an opinion. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes. We are back with Roger Cradaville talking about 3M League baseball, other baseball, town baseball around the area, talking also about just a little bit of mid-Illinois history. I mentioned right before there was a particular player you wanted to talk about a little bit, and was it Vukovic, or somebody you said you wanted to...
Yeah, he wasn't a player. He was the one I did the story on. Yeah, Voogie, they call him.
Oh, Voogie. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, Larry Voogie. Yeah, he grew up on the east end of Mount Olive and from coal mining family, you know, not exactly real wealthy Croatian Slovak section of town. And make a long story short, because you can read it, it'll be in the Buzz next month, and it's in the Mount Olive Herald this week. It's a long story. But he went to California, and I'm cutting out a lot of stuff in between. Ended up in California and stopped at a bar in California, Hollywood, and one day to have a beer because he just lost his job. And a guy by the name of, big guy, sat next to him by the name of Merlin Olsen. You might remember him, the fearless foursome for the Rams and All-American, NFL pro. Mr. Garvey on Little House of the Prairie, et cetera, et cetera. Said, what's the matter? And Larry said, well, I just lost my job. He said, well, you know, I own a dealership, and do you think you could sell cars? He said, I don't know. I guess so. I guess if you don't have a job, you can do anything, you know. So he got the job, and he sold Ferraris and Porsches, which are high,
high-item
cars. And he met so many celebrities and stories. And if you get a chance to read the Herald or the Buzz, read the story on all the people that he met. The rock star, Eddie Van Halen, he sold him a car, became close friends of his. A guy from NCIS
Mark Harmon.
Mark Harmon, Tom Harmon's son, and Jonathan Winters, and some of the movie starlets that came in there, the beautiful Kim Basinger and different people that he met that he sold cars to and didn't sell cars to, and he had great experiences there. So my story talks about his experiences out west. And so he spent 10, 12 years there selling cars, making a name for himself, making definitely a lot of friends. And then moved back to the area, and he's living in a house right next to, on the highway 138, right next to Bunnell Cemetery. And he's a great character to talk to. I interviewed him probably four times. I couldn't get out of there in less than an hour or two every time. And, of course, I'm eating all this stuff up. And normally when I write these stories, I write them on a Sunday, and I write the whole thing on a Sunday. I don't spread this out because if I'm not in the mood, I can't write anything. So I got to be in the mood on Sunday after church, of course. And I start writing this stuff. I'm in the mood. And I wrote, it was probably 10, 11 pages, I wrote on his experiences on California. But he's one of those stories that you read about so much in some small towns. Somebody starts there, grows up there. Everybody knows him. Like I said, his name was Voogie in Mount Olive. Everybody knew him as Voogie. Goes to California, he's Larry. He's no longer Voogie in California. He's Larry, and because that was his job. And he had a great career in selling these cars to all these characters. Telly Savalas came in with his entourage one time, and they almost all have an entourage of two to three people. And he said, when you sell those kind of cars to them, you almost got to get a consensus of the group rather than selling it to one person, and you either yes or no. And, of course, with the type of cars you're selling, they're high-end, you know, $380,000 for a car, you know. And so he would be able to work with these entourages out, but Telly Savalas came in there, and they sat down by his desk, and one of the guys decided to put his feet on the Voogie's desk. And Telly went kind of berserk and jumped all over. He said, what kind of guy do you think this Larry runs here? You know, you don't do that. And he said there were different stories like that with everybody. Eddie Van Halen, I think that's the person's name. Eddie Van Halen, he became really close friends with the rock star, was married to Valerie Bertinelli. Bertinelli from One Day at a Time, if you recall. And they're divorced now. But he sold cars, actually, to both of them, but mostly to Eddie. Eddie was a good customer of his, and like I said, Jonathan Winters came in there, was in the showroom, and all he was doing was standing there, and he started being Jonathan. And before he was done, he put on a whole show just being Jonathan. He said that everybody was gathered, the mechanics and everybody from around the dealership came up there, in order to listen to what Jonathan had to say, and it was free. You
know? That's awesome.
So a lot of, that's just a couple samples is all I wanted to do. But
now your column is in the Mount Olive Herald every week.
Yes.
And in the Buzz every
month.
And in
the Buzz every month, yeah. Okay. Yeah, Tara takes care of it. And a lot of people from the Buzz call me, and, of course, the Herald locally, and let me know that they enjoyed reading this stuff about local people. And what I'm saying is, now, since I'm from Mount Olive White City, my stories are mostly about Mount Olive White City. But the thing is, every town can do what I'm doing. Because I remember years ago I went to the library in Bunnell to listen to the two Bertetti brothers come out. They were both in their 90s. And I just wanted to listen to them. And I told somebody from Bunnell, get a tape recorder. You gotta tape this. This is a history of Bunnell. See, that was a great story because one Bertetti brother went away and got a college degree and made a career of himself, and the other one had to stay home with mom and dad and run the store. And what was interesting is the library is named after Bertetti, but it's named after the one that stayed home, because the guy who left and did his thing and had his career and made his fortune didn't want his brother to not be recognized and remembered. You know, and that's great.
Yeah.
I like that when they do that. Willie Nelson now has a new book out, you saw, and it's about him and his sister. And he wants to give publicity to his sister because he's gotten enough of it all his life. Nobody knows she's his piano player. And he's got this story, and he wants to highlight her, get her out. But she's so quiet, she never says anything. On the interview, she was one of those that when you asked her a question, she said yes.
No.
Or no, and then the dead air time, you know. But he wants to do that. And these are good motives for these people.
That's for sure. Major League Baseball has done a tragic thing, and that is to disassociate with so many minor league teams, wanting to shrink the minor league system and turn it more into like a football training camp to a certain extent out in a bubble in Arizona or Florida. What's your thought on that, Roger?
Well, add this to the pile that's called Show Me the Money. Put it on that pile. I actually have a personal interest in this because working with the Cardinals for years and talking to a lot of these kids that, you know, everybody has a dream. I had a dream. My son had a dream. My brother, bigger dream than us, tell you the truth. He was so interested in wanting to play. But it's a shame what happens to these minor leaguers. I know when Tim played with the Red Sox, played with him 2 years. He played in Lowell, Massachusetts, and he played in Battle Creek, Michigan, and did well. I mean, hit over 300. I mean, he did well. But he wasn't projected, and that's a big word, and I've talked about that to Terry many times on the air. Hate that word. You know, good glove, no bat. Good bat, no glove. Can't run.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a stereotype. Keep in mind that the worst players the Cardinals have, whoever that is, fill in the blank yourself, was pretty good.
Yeah.
I always thought the short second baseman was not very good. The Cardinals, Wong, the guys they have now. But he was the best player in the nation in colleges when he was in college. He was the number one player. I think he played for Hawaii or somebody like that. So here's the thing when they play minor league ball. They give all the money at the top. Yeah, what is it, 560 or 570 some is a minimum salary at the major league level.
Right.
Now, if you're playing AAA ball or minor league ball and you're on a major league salary, you're okay. You're living in, you know, Springfield, Missouri, and you're making St. Louis pay. But you're very unique. There's not many like you. When Tim played, he was paid $1,000 a month for 4 months. And he had to pay to have his uniform cleaned, the Red Sox uniform cleaned, and he got $150, I don't know if it was a week or a month, during spring training. They provided breakfast and lunch, and you had to buy your rest yourself. So, and that's typical. Mm. That's not unusual for that to happen to those minor leaguers. So many of your minor leaguers are 15 and 16-year-old Puerto Ricans or Dominicans or, you know, people from the West Indies there, and they have nothing. cutting sugar cane, maybe in the field, or playing ball. So that money seems pretty good for them. In fact, they sent money home. But that's not normal. That's not unusual. And then they cut them loose. Say they're 15, and they don't turn out to be that good. I could name you several of the Red Sox that didn't turn out. So now they're 17. They played. Now they got to go back to wherever they came from, go back to the cane field, I guess, because they got nothing.
Yeah.
And because those are unique. It's a sad story that, and there are certain major leaguers that like to share some of that money. Why can't you take 10% off these budgets and feed the minor league? Give them several thousand dollars a month so that they can live the whole year. You know, they got to get jobs in the steel mills or factories or construction or what is in the off season in order to be able to survive. So you ask if I get an opinion. I definitely got an opinion.
I
experienced it for 2 years with my own son, and then he finally retired in order to get a teaching job up at Genoa Kingston High School near Chicago, and he regrets it to this day that he did retire at that time because he was doing well, and it was just time. You know, he was going to get married, and if you're going to get married, you got to have some money.
Got to have some money, that's for sure.
You can't live off there. And it's a rough life for these people.
One of the best examples we can talk about right now that's in the news every day is the incredible job Luke Voit's doing for the Yankees. And, you know, 7 years in the Cardinal system. And the Yankees said, we tried to get him before, you know, we did. And look what happened. But good for him. I mean, I hope he gets the AL MVP, you know.
Well, it makes you wonder sometimes with the Cardinals. I know most of these people that are at the top there. I know of them, and I know them. And I don't blame the manager for what's going on with the Cardinals, because the manager can only work with what he's got.
With what he's got,
but
yeah.
There are people who have known, and I don't know this to be true, this is just an opinion, there's about 2 to 3 hitters on the Cardinal tee, and the other 6 or 7. When you're hitting 188 and 100, I know it's a unique year, but it's a unique year for everybody. Yeah. I mean, the teams that are winning, doing well, are also having the same experiences that those teams that aren't. You know, and I feel sorry. I'm a big Cardinal fan. Don't get me wrong. I support them 1,000%. But I don't like what's going on, because they need to spend some money to get some players. Now, they had a shot at Arenado this year, third baseman for Colorado. I was rooting as I could root to get him. They didn't get him.
No.
They could have got him, but the money still kept it.
Yeah, and missing out on Lewis Robert from the White Sox was a big deal, too, because he's done tremendous for the White Sox. Well, what do you think? We've got this short season coming up. I mean, the playoffs start next week. What do you think about having all these teams in the playoffs?
It's going to be next year, too. They said they're going to continue with extra teams. Why not? I mean, you go to these other leagues, practically everybody's in the playoffs.
That's true.
Why
they
would
are.
You pick certain teams that can't make it? Because, hey, certain teams do come around. But if they're really bad, they're going to be bad in the playoffs, too.
Yeah, that's true.
But if they're just coming around and the season ends, look out. You know, you've seen that happen. You've seen wild card teams in baseball.
We saw the Marlins
Marlins
it a few years ago.
It did in Arizona, too.
Arizona, too. That's right.
Yeah. So you have these teams that will come back on it. But, see, that's the thing that, to me, with the Cardinals, is the responsibility of providing the players. And don't get me wrong, you and I could look at the same player and have a different opinion on that. But right now, Moneyball changed a lot of things.
Oh, sure.
And I know John Vooch, a good friend of mine with the Cardinal disease now, he was in charge of the statistics. When I was scouting back in 2000, he was there. He was doing the statistics then. That was long before Moneyball came out.
Yeah.
But that's the way we look at it now. The old crusty guys, and I was with a bunch of them. I could Virgil Melvin and Jim Belts out of Springfield, and I can name you a bunch of them. We'd sit in that room at the draft, and we'd evaluate the personnel. Can they throw? Can they hit? Have they got some pop in the bat? How's their legs? Blah, 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 blah. And then you'd evaluate them, and you did pretty good. I mean, but they didn't think that was smart enough, that the machine should do the evaluation.
Roger, my freshman baseball coach at Ramsey High School was a guy named Tony DiMaceo. Tony DiMaceo had his minor league run. I'd watch him, you know, take batting practice after our practices. I'd saw him hit line drives like, I thought, how is this guy not playing in the big leagues?
Yeah.
But he wasn't very big.
Right.
And by his own admission, he wasn't very fast. But he was a pretty good judge of talent because he did eventually become a scout for the Braves and then director of scouting. And he did sign John Schmoltz and he signed Chipper Jones. So he signed some pretty good guys. So.
Well, see, that's another thing, too. You know, years ago, little guys could play. You know, I mean, Mike Krivich, who played 8 or 9 years in the major leagues, the Browns in 44, he's that Brown special was on public television last year. And by the way, that was produced by a guy from Montreal, Eric Karlovic.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Eric Karlovic helped produce that show for Channel 9 through his a computer company he's involved with, because it was so funny that some of the people listed in the credits were friends of his that he had given them credit for doing. Now, maybe they did a lot. I don't know. But Krivich was 5'7", maybe 150 pounds. That's not very big.
Well, if you remember, Freddie Patek was asked a question. He was asked a question one time and said, what's it feel like being the smallest guy in the major leagues? And you know what he said? It's better than being the smallest guy in a minor league.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. But, you know, the talent level is so great at the major league level. I mean, we sit there watching our television, and I was a coach for a long time. I worked with kids all the time. But I would bring kids from the area who I thought were really pretty good. And not knocking it, because some of my kids I brought there were good. But they weren't as good as I thought they were. Because when you compare them, you know, you compare this guy to this guy from the University of Alabama, or this guy from University of Illinois, or Missouri has quite a good success record of sending guys to the majors, and you find out they're really not as good as you thought they were. And so it adjusts your evaluation system a little bit. It works on that.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Coming up, of course, as we approach fall, we're doing it without high school football, which is one of the saddest things, I guess, right now, that, you know, we're playing classic football games as a bit of a void. I'm sure hoping we got basketball like we're supposed to on time. But how do you feel about having these games postponed, you know, by the governor? What's that strike you?
You know, it's funny that you're talking to me today, because if you'd have talked to me 3 days ago or maybe 3 days from now, my opinion might change again. I know football is going to start in February, mm-hmm. So get used to your snowshoes on.
Yeah.
Baseball is going to start after that. It'd go into June. I don't know why they didn't play baseball in the fall, because every major town's got this wooden bat league. My grandson, Luke Crowderville, Tim's boy, plays with the Pawnee, which I like because they're all Pawnee kids. So some kids that maybe wouldn't have got a chance to play on a select team are getting to play. Mm-hmm. And they're doing well. Doing this, what I'm getting at. But they play at Taylorville every Sunday or Saturday. 2-3 games they play. And our crowds are not that big, but they're spaced out. Some got, like society, some got masks on, some don't. I think the outdoors is different than the indoors. I really do. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, which is very possible, but I think there's a difference being outside. I don't see why small-town football couldn't have been played. But, you know, I'm going to tell you something. People are hungry for this. I told you earlier.
Yeah.
I went to my granddaughter, played in sixth grade. She plays for a Pawnee Junior High team. And we went to games, and you can't believe the crowds. There's people behind the fences out there for a grade school girls' game. Usually you're lucky you get the parents team, because it's, you know, it's people are working. You don't even
sure.
get them there. But the crowds that are there are tremendous. People are hungry for outdoor sport. So whether you want to pick a side on this politically or otherwise, I don't have an answer. Nobody has an answer. All I know is we're very, very interested in the health of each one of us. I know I have friends. We just lost Rosalie Petrello, a teacher third grade. She was in the Gillespie Nursing Home, died from COVID. We all know people who have died from COVID. There's 200,000 of them now. And so that's kind of serious. And being a historian, that even makes me more knowledgeable of what the virus did in 1918-19, you know, and how it destroyed a certain part of the population.
Sure.
Where people couldn't even leave town. They couldn't, they had to get permission to come to a town, to leave a town. Flu killed, you look at the Mount Olive Cemetery or any town around here, take a look at 1918-19, see how many young people's graves there are. Barrett died at that time. Young people died. So it's serious.
We got about 7 or 8 minutes left.
Okay.
What would you like to talk about? Because I know you've always got something on your mind and something that maybe interested you. I'd love to hear what you're thinking.
Well, I probably think too much, so I probably got a lot of thoughts on my mind. I know I'm concerned about our society now. Politically, I don't intend to say anything about that because it depends who you are and where you're at and what you think, so you can make your own judgment, and particularly make it in November when election time comes. But I'm a history teacher, so my wife and I talk about this often. She'll say something, I'll say, hey, you ever heard of President Harding? Most of his cabinet went to prison. He ran around with somebody's other wife, and his death was suspicious. Well, that's kind of serious.
Yeah.
But we survived that. And then if you want to pick a party and say somebody from that party or somebody, we survived that. I mean, people were worried like heck about Franklin Roosevelt. Was in there too long, but we survived that, you know, and on and on and on. But I'm concerned about our society now because I'm a strong believer, and so is most Americans, I think, of America first. I have no problem with that. But we're in a very big world right now, very big world. In fact, it's a big world, but it's closer than it's ever been.
True.
You can get to those places in a short time in airplanes, et cetera. Personally, I wouldn't want to leave the country right now. As I tell my wife, I'd be afraid he wouldn't let me back in, you know, if I left. But my daughter, who's got a company in Chicago, Jane, she goes to Greece. She likes Greece, and she'll go there. She's one of those people that when she works 20 hours a day. When she plays, she goes to Greece or someplace like that. And that's great to do that. But, see, I wouldn't want to be this way. I'm really not a good internationalist because the only country I think I've ever been in that wasn't the United States was Mexico, and of all places to be at, Tijuana. I was on a housing trip once, and we went across the border again. I was afraid they weren't going to let me back in. You know, they used to say when you went into Tijuana, you put your hand in your pocket, there's another hand in there taking your watch or something.
Oh, my.
That's an old joke. I don't care to. People say, why would you want to go to Czechoslovakia? That's where your father was born. I don't care. I'm Bohemian, but I'm American first.
Sure.
And that's just the way I feel. Or Germany for my mother. You know, on her side, Simberger, a very good German name. You know, her dad was shot at Verdun Riot. He's a historical person. But I don't want to go to Germany. If I ever went out, I think I'd like Ireland or Italy, only because of what people have said about it. But I don't care whether I'm 82 years old now. You know, I don't know how many more years I've got on this earth. But I want to see America. You can't see anything better in the world than you go look at Mount Rushmore. Or if you go to Yellowstone and walk out there. Or go to my favorite, Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I was younger, because Disney World is an adult playground as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
It might be for kids, but it's sure next year the housing is in January. We're supposed to go to Disney World for our meeting, but Macomb County Housing, that is. But I don't know if we'll get to go because, you know, it's all limited. But I think what you do is you insist in our lives today, we need to enjoy what we have and what we can do. There's plenty to worry about. You know that.
Oh,
plenty
my, yes.
To worry about. If you want to pick and choose about your worrying, fine, do this. I don't even know if I'll watch the debates when they come up. I don't even know if I'll do that. I may. I'm a history, so I should do that. But I'm not teaching it anymore, so really, do I need to? Well, yeah, I'm an American. I need to know what's going on.
I was talking, Sean and I talk every day, you know, at 140, and I was telling Sean a couple of days ago, I can't wait for the debates. I think they're going to be fascinating. Yeah. Maybe the best ones that we've seen in the last four or five presidential elections.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much at stake.
Yeah, you know. There is so much at stake, but the thing is, you almost have to be able to sort out what is and what isn't.
Oh, sure.
And unless you can do that, and you're the opponent, whether you're Trump or Biden, you're going to have to be able to point that out. But do you really want to have a debate of pointing out untruths?
No.
I mean, we don't want that. I want them to debate the issues. I don't want them to tell me what you are. I want you to tell them what I am. You know, I want Trump to say, this is what I believe in. And I want Biden to say, this is what I believe in. I don't care if you weren't kind to your mother. I don't care about that. I want to know what you stand for.
Yeah.
And then I'll vote accordingly. But that's all I care about. Now, once they get into this name-calling and insulting and back, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah. No, you're right about that.
I don't want to hear that. If you want to say it, then I'm going to turn over to my favorite show, Hogan's Heroes, and turn that on, you know.
It was a simpler time when we watched Petticoat Junk.
That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Roger, it's been a real pleasure having you here today for an hour. Thank you much. And we'll do it again in the spring.
Oh, yeah, I'll be glad to.
Okay.
As long as I got the mind going, it's still sharp, and I'm still a good listener. And this is what more people need to do, is to listen. You know, and if you can listen, and you might learn something. I wish I would have been able to talk to my dad. We all can do that.
Oh,
my
yeah.
dad almost never talked. You know, I mean, I can't remember anything my dad really said. I think one time he said, you know, you're a good hitter. That's the only time I remember anything good. You know what I mean? I don't mean good, but positive.
You know?
There were a lot of good things. But that was normal with old-timers. They just didn't say anything. They never expressed their feelings. You know, they went to the coal mines or the factory, and they worked their butt off, and they came back and had their couple of brewskis and went to bed and start all over next day.
22 years, the RBI leader at Eastern Illinois University, Roger Cradiville, Hall of Fame at Eastern, Sun Tim Hall of Fame at Southern. So you've been blessed. That's a great thing.
That's great.
But you've also been blessed by the opportunity to live in a community that you have embraced and they've embraced you, and your education, you know, your years as an educator, I think, has been a great blessing as well.
I'd like to add just one thing, too, though. There's no way you get through 57 years of marriage without a good wife. I mean, my wife, Mary, has been my best friend, and I know this sounds like I'm reading it off a card or something here, but I really feel that way. I've got two great kids and grandkids, and you know, I mean, sure, everything's not perfect. There's ups and downs and stuff. But when you add it all up and you're in the plus column, hey, what else do you need?
Yeah, nothing else. Thank you, Roger.
We'll
do this again in just a few short months, okay?
I appreciate it.
And by the way, this interview we will have up either on the website or on my Facebook page or both probably by Monday. So somebody said, oh, I really wanted to hear that and I missed it, tell your friends that they can hear it, and we'll make sure where
I will.
They
I
know
gotta
where
listen
it is.
To do now to find out what the heck I said.
That's right. Thanks, Roger.
Thank you.